You know, after we lost those Super Bowls, if I had won all three, I don't know if I'd be the person I am today. But boy, losing those three put a chip on my shoulder. And I hate it more for my teammates than anybody else.
Good evening and welcome in. It's another edition of Skol Stories. I'm your host, Mike Wobshaw from the Vikings Entertainment Network, coming to you from TCO Studios at Winter Park and coming to you with part two of our conversation with Pro Football Hall of Famer and Vikings legend, quarterback Fran Tarkenton. We had part one of our conversation with him last week on Skol Stories. The conversation was so good and so long, we have part two, and that's coming up in a minute. But first, I want to get to the current state of your Minnesota Vikings on this Tuesday evening. Of course, they're coming off a disappointing 21-10 loss in Philadelphia last weekend. An uncharacteristic performance that was marred with mistakes, and some of those mistakes spoiled the return of Sam Bradford to Philadelphia and the team that traded him to Minnesota just 8 days before the season began, and spoiled a great defensive effort by Mike Zimmer's crew. The Vikings defense turned the Eagles over four times. That included two interceptions and a lost fumble by rookie phenom Carson Wentz, who's having a great debut season but did not look great against this Vikings defense. The good news is there were some individuals who stood out in a positive way for the Minnesota Vikings. Jeff Locke and Blair Walsh have the kicking game in good form right now. Cordarrelle Patterson, who's making a difference on special teams not just as a returner but as a gunner, also had a touchdown catch in Philadelphia. He was targeted seven times in the passing game by Bradford, and he caught all seven of those targets, including his second touchdown catch of the season. Also looking good on Sunday in Philadelphia, cornerback Xavier Rhodes. I don't know if it was his best game as a member of the Vikings, but certainly was up there among the two or three best games so far in his young career. Xavier had an interception of Carson Wentz on a beautiful diving play in the middle of the field, and he also forced a fumble on running back Ryan Matthews late in the game that gave the Vikings another possession, a possession that they turned into a touchdown when Cordarrelle Patterson hauled in a Sam Bradford pass. And that gives them something to build upon as they head to Chicago. Bears are 1-6 this season. The Vikings are going to try and turn them into a 1-7 outfit while they get back on the winning track. They still sit atop the NFC North, but they're going to have to win some games against some division opponents, two of those coming up in the next 3 weeks, if they want to stay on top of the division. Okay, that's enough of your current Vikings. Let's get into the Vikings gone by and more with Fran Tarkenton. We asked him, Fran, what's the best team you were ever on? What was the best Vikings team you were on?
The team that was the best Viking team that I was on was the one that lost in the Hail Mary pass to Roger Staubach. That was before Ahmad and Sammy White got there. So we weren't great at wide receiver. We beat Dallas that day every way, upside down. There was no way in the world they could have won the game. And they get the proverbial Hail Mary pass, but before that they had a couple of questionable calls. Roger was really struggling all day, and he threw the Hail Mary pass that changed my life, because that was our best team, best chance. But I think if we win that game, we're like four straight Super Bowls. And so all those teams were competitive. The last two teams that I was on, you know, all of us were getting old then. But my best receivers I've ever had were my last couple of years when I had Ahmad Rashad and Sammy White. And they were great, great receivers. But all of us played a long time. All of us played every game. It's amazing when you look back. But we weren't in our prime in those last few years. If we could have had this group of people together, you know, 5, 6, 7 years before, we'd had a little better chance.
All right, let's go to the current Vikings under head coach Mike Zimmer. Tell me what you like about the way they're structured with Mike Zimmer, who's the head coach, but his forte is defense. He's got Norv Turner, of course. His forte is offense. He's the offensive coordinator, and he's been a head coach. Tell me what you think about the structure here that Mike Zimmer leads.
I don't know him personally. I've talked to him. I like him. I like he's a football guy. And the important thing is that, you know, the Will family, which owns the team, first of all, you know, we had five owners. They were scattered about, but that was a kind of a good thing, because none of them messed with the team. Now, we didn't have a very good organization until Jim Finks came in to be the general manager. But for years, the ownership was four or five different people. And then Red McCombs became an owner, but briefly, and then the Will family is a sole ownership themselves. They got some minority partners, but it's the Will family. And what they've done well, they have gone out and hired the best people they could hire. Does that mean they're always going to work out? No. They hired some really good people that worked for a while that didn't work out. But they brought in Mike Zimmer. Mike Zimmer's a football guy. He's a football coach. You know, and that's what he loves, and that's what he is. And he's got enough security that he goes out and brings North Turner in, who's a football coach. And he's been a head coach. But he brought him in because he thought he was a great offensive coordinator and they could work. And I'm sure, I'm not there, but I'm sure Zimmer is so smart. He wants his offensive coordinator to go run the offense, and he's going to run the defense, and he's going to be the overall guy. I think that works for us. And I think our general manager, who I've never met, but I've talked to a lot, and I think he has built a scouting organization that goes out and does a good job of evaluating players, understands we got to build a team through the draft. That's how you sustain and build, and I think they've done a good job of that. And you know, it goes in cycles. You know, a few years ago, when we were you know, winning division championships, and the Will family had just come on board, I thought we had the best roster in football. And it didn't pay off into a Super Bowl win, but we won. And then we've had a turnover, because you have turnovers. You know, the average life expectancy is 4 or 5 years for an NFL player. I think they've done a good job in bringing that back now. But Mike Zimmer, I think, is the key. If you don't have a great head coach that's a football coach, that's what he's done. He's not a politician. He's a footballer. He understands that he's got to have players. If he doesn't have players, he can't coach the players up. And he goes out and gets a veteran staff that's a good staff. But coaching does not win without great players. But we've made some really good draft choices. We've got some players that can rush the passer. We got some skilled players that can go and get a football. We're building that package. Is this the year? I think we're probably a year away from being as good as we can be.
The balance between the natural talent that one has and then the work ethic that one also has to get some of that talent to come to the surface. Where do you think you fell in terms of striking that balance?
I'll tell you this right now. Everybody that gets drafted to the National Football League has the ability to play football. They can all throw it. They all got, athletic skills, leadership skills, and all those things. But you cannot measure all the other stuff, right? Ryan Leaf had more ability than Peyton Manning ever thought about having. He was bigger, stronger, faster than Peyton. He could throw it farther, throw it harder, could run faster, and so forth. And Indianapolis almost took Ryan Leaf. But they took Peyton, and the second pick was San Diego, took Ryan Leaf. How'd that work out? Tom Brady was a sixth-round draft choice, playing Michigan. They benched him his senior year, didn't even get him a chance till his senior year, for Drew Henson, who had all the stuff, right? Joe Montana was a third-round draft choice. John Unitas was a free agent. All of them can play, but you got to look beyond the play. But the scouts say they're looking for the big, strong arm. He can make all the throws. He's big, he's strong, he's this. So they overlook Russell Wilson because he's 5'10". They overlook Fran Tarkenton because I'm 6 foot barely. And I'm a third round draft choice. And Joe Montana's a third round draft choice and all these other things. I think that the people that are drafting quarterbacks never played quarterback. How do they know? How do they know what a quarterback's like? I know, I lived it. And I've told Spielman up there and I've told other people, if I owned a team, I'd go out and find me an ex-great quarterback. Not me. I'm not for sale. But I want you to go out and look at all the quarterbacks, the top 25 quarterbacks in college football. I want you to go out and meet them and see them and come back with some recommendations, because that's who knows quarterbacks.
More coming up after the break with former Viking Fran Tarkenton. But before we go to break, a programming note. on how you can join a current Viking. Join host Mike Mussman, along with defensive end Everson Griffin at Clive's in Champlin, on Thursday at 5:30 p.m. for a live broadcast of Vikings Country. You could win some great prizes, including tickets in the Miller Lite Lounge at U.S. Bank Stadium. Visit Vikings.com/Vikings Country for more info and a full schedule, and stay tuned for more Skol Stories. Welcome back. More Skol Stories coming at you in a minute. I'm your host, Mike Wobshaw. Before, though, I want to tell you about this. You like to wear your Vikings emotions on your sleeve, literally? Well, 2016 exclusive inaugural season gear is at the Vikings Locker Room Store. Open at U.S. Bank Stadium. For novelty items and apparel, visit the official Vikings Locker Room Store at Mall of America, U.S. Bank Stadium, and online at VikingsLockerRoom.com. Let's get back to our man, Fran. Here's more from our conversation with him. All right, Vikings fans, they get a lot of credit for being loud. They were loud at the Metrodome. They've been loud at U.S. Bank Stadium. What do you remember, though, about playing in front of those passionate purple fans?
You know, it's an interesting thing. People have asked me that before. I look back and sometimes I wonder, did I really play? You know, I know I did. I don't remember hearing or seeing fans in the stands. I look back at that phenomena. I can see myself warming up. I'm running out of the tunnel. I can tell you what plays happened, what part of the field. I can visualize everything that happened in Old Met Stadium, where it happened, or at Sanford Stadium at the University of Georgia. I don't remember hearing or seeing the people. And I guess, in looking back, that I was so focused on what we were doing, and so that I didn't hear them cheer or boo. I wasn't aware of them. And I look back, I guess that's a good thing. But I think I'm not unusual. I never talked to anybody else about that to hear what they say about that. But I was oblivious to fans, whether it was on the road or in our place. I didn't think we had a disadvantage on the road because I didn't hear or see the fans.
How about down in Atlanta? You ever run into any Vikings fans down south?
Some. More in New York. I travel to New York 3 or 4 times a year. In New York, you think, well, you know, with the massive population, they're all Giant fans or Jet fans, but they're not. They're Viking fans in New York. A lot of them. I did a book signing in New York. And there were hundreds of Viking fans coming to get a book signed by me. But they're Dallas Cowboy fans in New York, and they're Philadelphia Eagle fans in New York, and they're 49er fans in New York. And it's just, you know, New York is a melting pot. But down here, I don't run into many. But down here in the South, they're Falcon fans, but, you know, they really are Georgia Bulldog fans. And they're SEC fans. And the Bulldogs, spelled D-A-W-G-S, dogs, that I grew up in Athens, Georgia, the Bulldog. And I went to high school there. I played my high school games in their stadium. And then I played my 4 years at Georgia. And so I'm a Bulldog. And Bulldogs are big stuff in the state of Georgia.
What do you think of U.S. Bank Stadium? Long-awaited new home of the Vikings right in downtown Minneapolis. Big, brand-new stadium.
I could have never imagined in 1961 that the NFL could be this big. I'm just amazed. I tell people, since I'm so much in business and I, you know, invest in a lot of businesses, my own businesses and this and that, if someone had a pot of money and they wanted to put that pot of money and had the luxury to put it anywhere they wanted to, what would be the safest investment and that they could have and also get the best return of anywhere they could invest the money? An NFL franchise would be my bet. That's what I would bet in. More than Apple. And Apple's pretty strong, right? But I think that the growth of the National Football League will not stop because we are a content-driven society, right? It's not just ABC, NBC, CBS. It's all the cables. And now, streaming video and streaming our games over mobile apps. It's amazing, and people are paying big money. And you look at a company like Time Warner, which I'm very close to. They, you know, that's where old Ted Turner started with Turner Broadcasting, a big part of Time Warner. They are winning the war with content, with HBO, with basketball. They're one of the only television powerhouses that are not in the NFL. Now, they like to be, but the NFL is the games are so great. They're so fast. They're so physical. It's the games that go back and forth and unbelievable. And that just excites people. It should. And so now we've seen the NFL, even college football, but more so the NFL, become the greatest piece of content that people want to watch all over the world. And that's not going to slow down. They're going to pay more and more money for the rights to be able to televise NFL football.
When that day comes, when the Vikings do win the Super Bowl, what's that going to mean to you?
Well, it won't replace the sorrow that I've had that we didn't win. We played, I got to play in three at the end of my career, and I played in one where I was healthy, the Miami when I was healthy, the other two, I wasn't. That has never left me. Bud laughs at that, but Bud has a way, he can remove it. I can't remove it. I don't want to remove it because I played with on some of the greatest teams with the greatest players that ever played. I thought we had the greatest culture of any place because it was our culture. And we all had been there, invested ourselves there for a lot of years. Jim Marsh and I played in the first game. Grady Alderman played the first game. Mick Tinglehoff came the next year, and Bill Brown came the next year. And so we'd been there a long, long time. Our fans had been there a long, long time. And, you know, after we lost those Super Bowls, my friends in Minnesota, you got to go say something to the fans in February, March. Because when you're invested in your team as a fan, as an owner, as a coach, as a player, you're devastated. You get to that pinnacle point, the last two standing, and you don't win those games. They haunt me. Now, do I lose sleep? No. I want it to haunt me because I think if I had won all three, I don't know if I'd be the person I am today. I think I'd have had the drive I had, but boy, losing those three put a chip on my shoulder. I still have a chip on my shoulder about it. And I hate it more for my teammates than anybody else. I don't hate it that much for me. I hate it for my teammates. That I could not deliver that for them. And I'll never get over that.
Will it be therapeutic at all to see a future team do it?
No, I've got to do it with Jim Marshall and Mick Tinglehoff. And so I'll be happy, but it won't replace it.
Wow, that's incredible. Let's end it on a lighter note. Of all the things you did, Fran, off the field, hosting SNL, hosting That's Incredible, what are the things you remember the most or what stands out to you from that part of your professional life?
Please, Lord, help guide Fran Tarkington, so that he will not humiliate himself like he did in the Super Bowl.
I hosted SNL, that was fun.
This is Eldrick Tiger Woods, and Eldrick is an accomplished golfer.
That's Incredible was boring, but I made it fun because I got to be with great friends with John Davis and Kathleen Crosby and all the crew and the sauce. But it wasn't my world. Monday Night Football, I had no fun in that. It wasn't my world. Dandy Don and I were longtime friends, and it was fun to be with him, but I didn't like that part of it. I like building businesses. I like helping people. My lifetime has been as an entrepreneur. I had a paper route in Washington, D.C. when I was 7 years old. When in college, I worked on farms outside of chicken farms, $40 a week. sold life insurance while I was going to University of Georgia. I've always worked, and I stayed in Minnesota for 2 years and worked for Wilson Truck System and then Holden Printing Company. And I worked. I did speeches for $25 a night. And then when I was 25, 26, I started building my own companies, and I keep building them. I keep expanding them. I keep learning. And the most fun outside of 24 years of high school football, 4 years of college football, and 18 years of pro football, outside of that, business is every bit as thrilling to me, and I can do it now at 75. And I love that. Around this office, we're doing unbelievable things, technology. And I would bet 70% of our people are under 35. Maybe 60, 50% are under 30. And watch these kids work and create, and we empower them to let those skills and come out and build. Back in the old days, it was the boss and everybody else just did what the boss said. Business has changed. It's not about the boss. You've got to get the input and cooperation from all the people. I tell them, I want you to think, create, and use your skills, which are different from my skills, and we blend those skills with a 75-year-old, with a 25-year-old, and we're doing great things for small business entrepreneurs. And that has been as close to the camaraderie and the urgency of winning a game on a Friday night or a Saturday afternoon or a Sunday night that I've ever had. Does it match it? In many ways, it does. It's not the surge you have on Friday night high school football or Sunday afternoon NFL football, but it's pretty damn good.
And that will do it for our conversation with Fran Tarkenton and for this episode of Skoll Stories. We thank you for joining us. If you want to hear that again or hear more from Fran, including part one of the conversation, you can check out the on-demand section of KFAN.com. And of course, you can go to Vikings.com, where we have every episode of Skoll Stories there waiting for you to come and check it out. We also have a bunch of other great Vikings content on Vikings.com. We encourage you to go there and check it out. And if you haven't already, download the Vikings app, and all of our great content will be delivered straight to your favorite mobile device. On behalf of Skoll Stories producer Nate Vaughn, I'm your host, Mike Wabshaw. We thank you for listening. Have a good night.